This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. U.S. Airways will miss a $110 million payment today to the pension plans of its mechanics and flight attendants. That's after the airline filed for bankruptcy over the weekend, the second time it's been forced to seek protection from its creditors in 2 years. And U.S. Airways is not alone. United is already in bankruptcy. Delta could soon follow. All the large traditional airlines are in deep trouble, afflicted, they say, by expensive labor contracts, soaring fuel costs, and cutthroat competition. Today, the troubles of the airline industry. We're going to focus first on what's happening at the airline. So if you work in the field, pilot, flight attendant, mechanic, baggage handler, how do things look to you? How concerned are you about your job and your career? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Later, we'll focus on the flying public and talk with the travel expert who can answer your questions about how all these changes might affect you. Joining us here in Studio 3A is George Novak, an aviation analyst at the Aviation Institute at George Washington University, also a former attorney with the Federal Aviation Administration. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
Is this the beginning of the end for the, I guess we're now calling them legacy carriers, right?
This is the beginning of change for legacy carriers. I think we're going to see some major changes in the next 2 to 3 years, and we're very likely to have fewer legacy carriers by the year 2006, 2007.
What is it that has forced this fundamental change?
I think you nailed it when you said it's a combination of factors. It's certainly labor cost. It's rising fuel cost in the past 9 months. It's passenger uncertainty in the post-9/11 atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's competition from the low-cost air carriers, the JetBlues, the Southwest, that have really placed pressure on the majors.
Does this go back to deregulation back in the Carter administration?
It does in some sense, although deregulation has been really a great benefit to the American flying public. They've benefited from low fares. They've benefited from increased service since deregulation. But, of course, the downside to that is the competition is sometimes tough for air carriers to survive.
And after 9/11, there was obviously a disaster for the airline industry. Is that still afflicting them?
It is, because there's still passenger uncertainty. You still have every little change in the warning status of the country, every message from Osama bin Laden or any terrorist group, any increased threat, and passengers will stay away from the air carriers. They'll mm-hmm. stay off the airlines.
And even the hurricanes, obviously, having a hurricane going through Florida on Labor Day weekend was not anybody's idea of a great weekend for the airline industry.
Terrible, because it was a very high cost for relocating aircraft, very high cost in resuming service, and of course they have the lost revenue from what would normally be the start of a season moving into Florida.
And all of us who drive saw, the last spring, the price of gasoline was pretty prohibitive. It's gone down sort of gradually since then. I assume that's all been reflected in the airline industry.
It certainly has. And when you have an aircraft that has thousands of gallons of aviation fuel on board and burning hundreds of gallons very quickly, those costs add up. And every cent change in fuel cost really affects the airline's bottom line.
Now, obviously, some airlines are doing pretty well, the low-cost airlines, Southwest, JetBlue, people like that.
Yes, they are. And some of that is because they've always had a lower cost structure. They're able to survive fluctuations better. Their labor costs are lower. They've hedged fuel prices, and they're using more fuel-efficient aircraft.
Now, how did they do those things? I mean, first of all, their cost structures, you say, are lower, labor mm-hmm. costs.
Well, they've had they have a different relationship in some sense with their unions or with their pilots, more participative. Participatory. Thank you. In some sense, and it's not that there's been an antagonistic relationship at the legacy carriers, although there has been at times. But the low cost carriers have kept their labor costs down, and in turn their pilots make less money, but they've enjoyed a little bit more job security over the past few years.
Now, the other part, you said they're hedging on fuel costs?
They've done a better job at hedging fuel costs, which means you essentially, you know what your fuel cost will be For a longer period of time, you know, sometimes for 12 to 18 months. And they've done that.
So you buy contracts for delivery now for October, November, whenever.
Exactly.
So you know what those fixed costs are going to be. In a sense, are you betting that prices will go up and what you bought it at months ago is going to look pretty good?
That's usually the case. I mean, you usually hedge against rising costs, and they've done a very good job at doing that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one major factor that a lot of people point to is, what U.S. Airways missed today, a flight to a pension program. The new carriers don't have these pension programs?
They don't have them to the same level, or they don't have them at all. These carriers, the legacy carriers, were created, you know, many years ago, and sometimes in the 1940s and 50s, and where pensions were a normal part of any benefits package. And this is carried through to their current day, where the low-cost carriers have been formed in more recent years when 401ks and less company participation is expected.
So they have much less of a burden for these pension programs. And also they're a younger airline, so they have fewer people who are older and retired.
As a general rule, yes.
Okay. Now, as you also look at the industry, the traditional airlines, the legacy airlines, the major carriers whose names we all know, they went to a hub and spoke system. That is, mm-hmm. If you wanted to get from New York to Des Moines, you change planes in Chicago and everywhere else. You can work out. Everybody knows where those changes are. In the South, if you're dying, whether you're going to heaven or hell, you change in Atlanta. But this hub and spoke system has proved to be inefficient.
It has to some level. I think the point-to-point carriers, the JetBlues, the Southwest, have proven that it is better to have air carriers, in some sense, go from just one city to another and get them back in the air and move on to the next city or on a return trip. They've done a better job at utilization of aircraft on point-to-point. The downside to that, of course, is that a number of communities aren't covered in this point-to-point service. The hub-and-spoke system has done a good job of covering smaller communities and rural communities with air service, and that's been the benefit of it. But it's been a costly system to maintain for the legacy carriers.
Now, also, talk to me for a minute about aircraft. I mean, you go to Southwest, they're flying, for the most part, Boeing 737s. I think I saw Wilbur and Orville scratched into the lining on one of those planes. These are not new aircraft.
Well, actually, Southwest has done a good job with a mix of aircraft. There are 737s. Some of them have just been produced this year. They run every model from the 737-300 to the 800, the advanced 737. But they've done one thing very well, and that is run one type of aircraft, which is a very efficient business model because you have fewer costs with spare parts. Maintenance is less expensive, whereas U.S. Airways has a number of different types and manufacturers of aircraft, and that it's expensive to maintain spare parts and to maintain those aircraft.
All right. Well, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Great. Again, in this first part of the program, we're going to be asking for people who work in the airline industry one way or another to talk about the industry itself. Later, we'll be taking questions about how this may affect consumers and for the flying public. So right now, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's talk with Bill, who's on the line from Lawrence, Kansas.
Hi, how are you doing today, Neil?
Very well, thank you.
Good. My only real comment is that I've been in the airline industry for 25 years. I was with TWA until American bought them. And as I see it, deregulation has been a terrible, terrible, whatever you want to call it, blow to the airline industry and the employees. I don't even really see that it's been that much of a benefit to the flying public because it's destroyed the route system. You can't get from point A to point B without having to go to point Z first. And I just kind of wanted to put my two cents in there. I don't know if it's really worth anything, but it's not really helped our job security at all.
George Novak, is Bill right about job security, and is he right about also cheaper fares, which was what competition and cheaper fares were what deregulation was supposed to inspire?
Bill, I'll grant you one point and then argue with you on the other. I think deregulation has been very difficult for the employees of the air carriers, and I think it has created problems because it created competition. Now, the flying public, I believe, benefited from that competition in lower fares, but the employees at the major carriers certainly did not benefit. Because of that competition, it was tougher for the carriers to make their revenue targets and to keep up what was a high labor cost structure. And we're seeing that the result of that, like with U.S. Airways today.
Well, give me let's talk about it, for instance. Now, I understand that one of the triggers for U.S. Airways decisions was when Southwest decided to go into Philadelphia, which was one of U.S. Airways' major hubs on the East Coast, an important airport, and one that has always been traditionally very expensive. A walk-up fare from Philadelphia to Boston was over $1,000 sometimes.
That's correct. And DOT, the U.S. Department of Transportation, has even coined the phrase the Southwest effect, about when Southwest goes into an airport and the fact that it brings down all the airfares at that airport. But this is something that could not have happened in deregulation because under the regulated system, carrier would have had to apply to DOT or the Civil Aeronautics Board and argue their case. And the CAB was very loath to encourage competition because they wanted to make sure that everybody had their piece of the pie in certain sectors.
Bill, you said you used to work for TWA and now for American Airlines?
Yes, that's correct.
And how does the future look to you now?
Well, as a TWA employee, it doesn't look really very good. An American employee, formerly TWA, the employees of American Airlines seem to have a secure job. But as you may have heard, most of the pilots, all of the pilots and flight attendants of TWA have been laid off post 9/11. And I work at the Kansas City overhaul base, and we have virtually no security. They have said that we're going to keep you and we're going to use you as an overhaul repair station for outsourced contracting. But we don't have our own maintenance security within the airline at any point at all. We don't feel secure from one day to the next. We don't know what's going to happen.
Well, Bill, good luck.
Well, thank you very much, Neil.
Appreciate the phone call.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk now with Jack. Jack's calling from San Diego.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Okay.
Oh, good. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, you're on the air, Jack.
I'm a flight attendant with Northwest Airlines for 27 years. I'm a purser. I fly mostly international. My comment, if you'd like, is that I agree. The legacy carriers are in trouble. Costs are rising, not only labor. I'm of the opinion that we need to cooperate with the company to do what's necessary. We already pay some of our health insurance, not unlike many companies in the United States. I would do a lot of negotiating at the table to guarantee my pension if I could on any level, including a pay cut. However, there is a suspicion of upper-level management, given the largesse that most corporations in the United States have granted themselves, while workers like us have watched. Now, the other thing I want to point out is that with the general flying public in the United States, I feel that they, in the last couple of years, and I see it all the time, they feel that they're entitled for a lot for very little. I recently had a passenger from Los Angeles to Paris. I was on the Detroit-Paris portion, who complained about his special meal and coach. I looked at his ticket. It was less than $600 round trip, and I just looked at him, and I said, "Sir, would you sell your house for what you paid for 20 years ago?" And he said, "Absolutely not. I'm no dummy." I said, "Well, you have every right to expect the best pilots, people in the cabin that know what they're doing, are coherent and can help and be gracious. You have every right for the plane to be fixed and safe and security, all of that, but we're giving away seats in terms of inflation for much less than what we sold it 20 years ago. And we're losing money, and I don't feel I should have to make $15,000, $20,000 a year less so that you can go from New York to Los Angeles for $200 round trip." And that's essentially, it's implicit. I mean, that's what we feel in the cabin. That's what we see when we hear people complain about what they're getting for the price they're getting.
Jack,
we do a lot to get that plane out on time, and we get it out on time safely.
Jack,
that's my comment.
Thanks very much for the 2 cents there, Jack. We appreciate the phone call. We're going to be talking more about the dilemma that unions face when we come back from a short break. We'll be talking with the president of the Airline Pilots Association. If you'd like to join us again, the phone number 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the airline industry and the changes it's facing. In a few minutes, we'll be talking with a travel expert who will be able to answer your questions about how these changes might affect you. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest is George Novak, aviation analyst at the Aviation Institute at George Washington University. And joining us now on the phone from Herndon, Virginia, is Captain Dwayne Wirth, president of the Airline Pilots Association, also a pilot for Northwest Airlines, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Hello.
Hi. Now, the when these large carriers have gotten into trouble, all of them have asked their unions for concessions on pay and working conditions. Did the U.S. Airways pilots shoot themselves in the foot when they refused to make the concessions asked for by management?
Well, no, they did not. And I think one of the things that has to be pointed out, a bankruptcy is for protection from creditors, not from employees. The loan covenants of the ATSB loan that U.S. Airways received were going to be in, there would be in violation of those covenants. And everyone knew that, certainly the pilots did, and so a bankruptcy, even if the pilots had agreed to 100% of what they were going to go into bankruptcy anyway, this negotiation was just to soften the landing for pilots so they don't have some emergency orders by a judge. But the bankruptcy was protection from the creditors, not from the employees.
Yet, as you know, once they're in bankruptcy, the airline can go to a judge and impose contracts on the union.
There is a process for that. It's called 1113, and there's emergency procedures, which can happen fairly quickly, but they're short in duration. There's a longer-term process called 1113, which would be more permanent, but that process could begin. And I do think the debate within the pilot group is still going forward now that they are in bankruptcy. What is the best course of action now that we're actually in? Is there a way to mitigate additional risk? And that debate within the union is certainly ongoing.
Now, I wanted you to ask, to address the situation not just for U.S. Airways, but as you know, this is a situation that that affects all the major traditional carriers. The unions face a terrible dilemma. If, of course, you want to hang on to the jobs and the pay scales everybody works so hard to fight for all those years. On the other hand, jobs are at risk.
No, obviously, it's a tough situation. Some of your earlier callers were referencing ticket prices. You know, today, the airline industry only gets $65 billion, whereas the same number of passengers produced just 3 years ago, $80 billion. So that's clearly a supply and demand issue, and the prices that started collapsing after September 11th never really recovered, and there's obviously too much capacity. But there's probably no better bargain in the world than airline ticket prices inside the United States.
Yet, if you're out there shopping for a quart of milk and it's 79 cents at Joe's and $1.50 over at Al's, you're going to shop at Joe's, aren't you?
Of course you are. I mean, the price used to be the only factor, or even the most important factor in the lotta, when business travelers had a larger share of the market. Frankly, discretionary travelers and leisure travelers have steadily increased the market. But also business travelers after 2001 and the price transparency provided by the Internet are able to shop and are not willing to pay premiums anymore for almost anything. So the marketplace and what the customers valued in 1999 at maybe the height of the boom, if you will, and 2004 are completely different values as reflected in what prices you can get for an airline ticket.
All right, let's get a caller involved. Eric joins us on the line from Wilmington, Delaware.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay.
I'm a captain for American Airlines, and my background, I've been around aviation since I was a kid. My father was a Pan Am pilot, laid off quite a bit, 15 out of 25 years he was laid off. So I'm familiar with the ups and downs of different parts of aviation. And I don't come into this with any expectations of, you know, what I should have or shouldn't have, but I think there are three things that people don't talk about. One is, I don't think it's quite accurate to say that Southwest pilots' costs are so much less than, say, American Airlines pilots. There's been a lot of research in all the contract negotiations that have gone on over the past few years, probably 6 or 7 years, and they're not really that far off. They get paid differently. There are various cost savings that Southwest has, but I think the business model has a lot more to do with that than the actual pilot costs. Second, they talk about deregulation, but I think it's half regulation, really. You'll find a lot of things that you have to fit in you have to get permission for, you have to request slots. We have to give up slots at O'Hare, blah, 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 and they want to give them to the low-cost carriers. It's like, if we're going to give them up, we give them up, but nobody gets them. You can't say, well, you have to give us some to give to the low-cost. Let them get their own. So it's sort of a half-regulation in some ways. And
well, George Novak, I wanted you to respond to that, this half-regulation that Eric is talking about.
And Eric, I think you're right. When the issue came up at O'Hare with the removal of the slots there, the question was, was this was regulation in itself, were the slots themselves regulation? And I think you make some very good points about the business model at Southwest, but their pilot costs are lower, and their business model is a model that uses higher aircraft utilization, and that probably does have as much to do with it as pilot costs. So I think you make some very good points.
And a lot of the things that they've done since 9/11, and supposedly the economic problems that were coming before 9/11, have been to get more efficiency out of the aircraft. So everybody keeps screaming labor, and I'm not one to say that it costs or people pay what they're willing to pay, But the fact is, it's not all labor. Labor is where they have to get it from right now because they've taken so long to make the other changes. They got it from us. Now they're making all these other changes to increase efficiencies and stuff. And you say, hey, guys, this is great. I could have done this earlier. Or now that you're doing it, are we ever going to see anything back of what we gave to you? And I have no problem giving up. But my problem is when they say give up and you don't get any chance of getting back when things turn around. And people don't talk about that either. At some point, everybody will be flying for commuter rates if you want to do that, and that's great. I won't be flying on airplanes because I won't have any confidence in the people doing it if they're willing to fly for that pittance of a salary.
Okay. Eric, thanks very much for the phone call.
All right.
Good luck. Captain Wirth, I did want to ask you, is part of the problem the frequency with which a series of executives at a series of airlines approaches the unions and says, sorry, fellas, we've got to ask for more cuts?
Well, certainly when you're back for the first, second, third, fourth bite of the apple all within a year, it lowers the level of confidence in employees that, as your previous caller just said, if you're going to make changes, I think a lot of the employees recognize the business model has changed. And they want their executives to respond to that. But what has happened, sadly, for almost the first 2 years now, almost going on three, was they wanted to keep mostly the same model, which was already failed and abandoned by the consumer, and just have the employees give them costs and not make the hard choices to change their model and their strategies and their fleet plans and their hubs. So hopefully some of that's underway now. But I'd like to also respond that, as he said, the Southwest, after 30-some years, only serves 60 airports, and there's a reason for that. They only serve the 60 largest airports. There's 429 airports in this country alone. 369 of them don't have Southwest for a reason. That business model only allows the cherry-picking of the biggest markets. That's a brilliant business plan for Southwest, but it's not a national transportation system that serves the whole country. And the legacy carriers, as they're known, and the hub carriers need to survive. There are international carriers. They serve small communities. They are the network of the country, and I'm confident they will, but not. They can't do this simply on the backs of lower labor costs because the productivity model will never be the same when you have multiple airplane types and serve small communities and international communities. It's simply not achievable.
Captain Wirth, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Dwayne Wirth, president of the Airline Pilots Association, a pilot for Northwest Airlines, and he joined us on the phone today from Herndon, Virginia. And let's get another caller on the line. Melissa's calling from Orange County in California.
Hi.
Hi, Melissa.
I'm really, really grateful that you've given us a platform to call and express our opinion. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, great, great. I hardly know what else to say to add to the comments already delivered because they're very insightful. I've been a flight attendant for American for 13 years. I've seen over the passage of time the company demolish morale in the deceit and the lies. And I feel after having given up between a 25 and 35% pay cut for 6 years, our contract is not renewable until 2009. I agree with the pilot who spoke before that our business model needs to change from the ground up. We're competing with companies like Southwest Airlines that have such a minimal type of product that people know what they're getting. They're not expecting more. here American Airlines is servicing all over the world as well as domestically and serving meals. It's a far more complicated cost structure, including the different aircrafts that we have. So we are an airline in search of a marketing plan, in my opinion, you know, and I think management who needs to take a lot of accountability in changing the whole corporate structure.
Well, let me add on and ask you to respond to Melissa's point to George Novak, but let me add on this email we got from Boyd Petrie in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this just a pure example of capitalism at work? Legacy airliners have been hindered by poor decisions. Isn't this just competition weeding out the weak?
I don't even know where to start. I think in one sense, yes, it is. It is capitalism, and that is one of the problems, though, and capitalism is harsh sometimes. And I think the employees of the air carriers have found that out. Melissa, you're with American Airlines?
Yes.
Okay, and you're lucky because American Airlines is probably of the majors in the best position right now. So,
yes.
You know, of all the majors we've discussed, certainly American is in the best financial position. These have been hard. These have been difficult times for flight attendants and for other employees, and you've had to make these cuts. I think we will see an evolution of the business models in the majors. But that will be time-consuming, and it will be painful for the employees because it is difficult to move from one model to another. It's an entirely different story when you're a startup air carrier, and you can start with a startup model, lower-cost, single aircraft type. It's painful for the employees.
Melissa, good luck.
I thank you so much for having this program. Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
Bye-bye.
Let's turn now to how the struggles of the airlines we've been talking about might affect you, the flying public. If you have questions about the future of airline travel, you can call us at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email address totn@npr.org. We're going to keep George Novak here in Studio 3A, and joining us now from our bureau in New York is Amy Ziff, editor-at-large for the online company Travelocity, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
So people who hold U.S. Airways tickets right now, how does the bankruptcy filing affect them?
Well, you know, my first thing to say is just don't panic. I think that there's so much talk about this. And as you've been discussing, you know, this is an industry in flux big time. And what we have to do is really look historically, look back at what has happened in the past. And so this is sort of something we've seen before. We've seen airlines, even U.S. Air, come in and out of bankruptcy mm-hmm. and still operate business as usual. And in the past, we've seen airlines use bankruptcy to restructure successfully and come out of it. And it hasn't really affected the passengers. We've seen that the frequent flyers, the loyalty programs, those awards have been continuing. I mean, we're talking about rewarding a really important segment of their market. And so they want to keep that. That's how they keep people coming back. However, this is kind of a something we've seen before, but it's a scenario with a twist. And so that's why there's so much talk about this. You know, can US Air recover? The fact is they probably have enough cash to make it through the end of the year. So you're pretty safe. But, you know, I always say this to people, do not stockpile your miles.
Frequent flyer
That's
miles.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's right.
Yeah, we're talking about the airline industry and what may happen as a result of the bankruptcy filing by U.S. Airways. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I just wanted to continue with you, Amy Ziff. You're talking about the end of the year because I guess the next big travel period and the next profitable period is the holidays.
Absolutely. Holidays, that's the sort of biggest time of year. I mean, Thanksgiving is when we see people traveling a ton. And then we'll see family travel again pick up. We sort of see it on the wane post-summer. And then business travel usually kicks in again in September. But then we see a ton of leisure travel happening in November, December, on into January. Peaks with school vacations again, February and March as well.
But if you were going into bankruptcy in terms of the popularity of all airline seats, this is a really bad time of the year, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I don't think that anyone would look at it and go, oh, well, this is a prime time of year for bankruptcy.
I'm not sure what the prime time is, actually.
Yeah, I think that that, you know, on the other hand, they could say, well, you know, maybe we're going to be able to sell some tickets sort of for the holiday and get people on our planes. And at least even if, you know, a lot of people are looking to cash in their miles when they fly U.S. Airlines, for example, and they see, well, there are a lot of people flying here, it can't be too bad, that may actually give them some confidence in the airlines. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Let's get a caller on the line. Dan is with us from Flint, Michigan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Dan. I own a medium-sized travel agency in mid-Michigan. I've been a travel agent for 14 years. And I'd just like to make a scenario and have your commentary about it. You know, 10, 15, and 20 years ago when the airlines were lifted to a multi-billion dollar agency and enjoyed black numbers and profitability, they had a front-end sales force, and that front-end sales force was the travel agent. That was thrown aside about 6-7 years ago when commissions were done away with and the airlines decided that we as a travel agent community would not be a profitable distribution mode and they wanted to move more online booking. As we study and see now hard data come out of what's happened, we know that about 18 to 22% of the buying public will move to an online booking type engine to buy an airline ticket, but still we're in the 60 to 70 mark as far as travel agents producing airline tickets. What I find funny is now I, as a travel agent, will not spend a dime, lift a finger, raise my voice to sell or to promote an airline ticket. I've moved everything to cruises and tours. My office now will print between 20 and 80 tickets a day, whereas 6 years ago we were printing between 1 to 400 a day, and we have just moved out of the airline ticketing business. I find it funny that an industry that had a top-notch, profitable sales force of 5, 10, and 15 years ago, I wish one major carrier would step up and say, we are going to institute commissions again and put the travel agent community out front again. Guys, take us to profitability.
All right. Amy Ziff is a little conflicted on this question. George Novak, is he right on this marketing point? I'm afraid we only have a few seconds left in this.
He is right. I mean, travel agents have suffered terribly because of the efficiencies of the Internet. Again, this is capitalism at its best and at its worst. It has had a terrible impact on travel agents and mm-hmm. travel agencies.
So, Dan, continued good luck with the cruise industry.
I have more profitability than I've ever had getting the airlines out of our hair. I mean, it's great that it happened, but it's horrible for the public, and the airlines are suffering the consequences now.
Okay. Amy, I hear you want to come in. We got 20 seconds for you.
I would just add that I think that along with that, the Internet, of course, has also made things very easy for people. And so you're seeing a lot of people who just prefer to get the job done very quickly and can do that. So I'm glad that it's good for Dan, because I also know it is good for customers and there are good points for the airlines. So I think it's definitely debatable, but important to just have that side as well.
More on how the changes in the airline industry may affect you as flyers when we come back from a break. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. We're also going to be talking about mandatory retirement age for pilots. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're wrapping up our conversation on the airline industry. In a few minutes, we'll switch topics to talk about a federal rule that requires commercial pilots to retire at age 60. Is it time to change that? We want to hear from you on that issue. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. Still with us, George Novak, aviation analyst at George Washington University's Aviation Institute, and also with us, Amy Ziff, editor-at-large for the online company Travelocity. And let's get another caller on the line. Liz joins us from Mankato, Minnesota.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my question. Mm-hmm. I have a family of four, and so with my husband and I, that makes six. And my question is, what is your advice for how a family of my size or even a couple children can travel affordably these days with all of these changes? We just choose to vacation around our home or places we don't have to fly, quite frankly, because of the costs. And I certainly don't want any changes in that to come on the back of the employees, but yet I do agree with some previous comments that maybe the business plans need to change. But all of that aside, what are your recommendations for a family traveling affordably these days? And I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Liz, thanks for the call. Well, Amy Ziff, do you have any ideas?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things, and we're sort of talking about the industry overall, one of the things that you'll see that's happening is really the rise of what we call the package deal. And the package is really created for people who are looking to save. You get a bundle, which means your air, your hotel, possibly even your rental car, maybe show tickets, all bundled into one single price. That means nobody has to show what they're selling any particular component for. Packages used to be a dirty word in travel, but now they're actually really terrific, and it's using a package that's going to suit you. So for a family of six people, you can actually reap great savings. I mean, you can, on the internet, get a package that you will be able to waive your booking fee for your flights. Now, for six people, that's going to be as little as $30 and as much as a few bucks more than that. That's dinner, perhaps. So, you know, that's one thing. Also, look for hotels that have kitchenettes so that you don't buy every meal out. That's going to be important. But bringing it back to the subject of airline bankruptcy and what's happening in the industry, you can really enjoy some incredible flight prices. And, you know, with fuel prices what they are and gas prices what they are, you really want to do the math on that, at how much you're spending to drive someplace on vacation versus what you could do to fly, and kind of weigh that difference.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email question from Mary Lou Finch in Roxborough, Philadelphia. Should I wait to purchase my family's tickets to fly across the country until closer to the holidays when we're traveling because of the changes still to come in the industry over the next couple of months?
I would say no on that one. I would say buy now, especially if you're looking at US Air as your traveler or your airline of choice, because you can cash in your miles, you know, get that done and get that in before the end of the year. As I said, I think you should be safe on that. But, you know, we look at this all the time. Does the early bird get the worm? Well, often it does, and especially when you're talking about a peak travel period such as the holidays. If you know where you want to go, you've got to get to see family, your best bet is booking early to make sure you've got that seat. You know, we are seeing that airlines have pulled capacity so that they can really maximize, and those planes are flying pretty full these days, so make sure you get your seat. I'd buy early.
Okay, and let me ask both of you a longer-term question. As the legacy carriers, the traditional major carriers, apparently are in the process of shaking themselves out, what is it going to look like 5 years from now? Are we going to have fewer hub-and-spoke airlines? Are there going to be fewer flights to smaller cities? George Novak.
I think we will see. I think we'll see probably a reduction or elimination of two or three of the legacy carriers in the next 3 to 4 years. And that will necessarily mean some reduction in rural communities and smaller communities, unfortunately. So that will be, it will hopefully be taken up by certain low-cost or smaller commuter air carriers. But it's hard to say. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a different landscape.
What do you see ahead, Amy Ziff?
Well, I think it's no doubt that change is on the way. I think this is a tremendously exciting time because where there's change, there's generally innovation. So I think there's huge opportunity. And, you know, this has been mentioned before, but there's definitely going to be some growing pains involved in that. I wish I had a crystal ball to precisely answer your question, tell you what it will look like in mm-hmm. 5 years. But the fact is, we'll still be flying. There'll still be people traveling. And there probably will be some different airlines out there.
Amy Ziff, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Amy Ziff is editor-at-large for the online company Travelocity, and we would also like to thank George Novak, aviation analyst at the Aviation Institute at George Washington University, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you.